The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
That sounded like the Werewolf of London.
I know, right? And he doesn't play that song anymore, Warren Zevon, if he's still alive. I think he's dead now. He is Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. Dark Side of the Pooch now runs every single night. What time is that? 7 o'clock there, James?
At 7 o'clock, Tony Curry.
7 o'clock every Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. You are now 5 days a week, my friend. How does it feel?
That's 3 o'clock Hawaiian.
It is 3 o'clock, and I can't believe you said Hawaiian.
I just made that up. I just want to be sure everyone on the islands knows what time to tune in.
I cannot believe you said that, because that has to do with my first story I want to throw at you this morning. But we wanted to make sure. We were doing Mondays and Tuesdays and Fridays at noon and 1 and 3, and I was like, let's just go ahead and run the thing 5 days a week and every single night at 7 o'clock here on the TKR app, and of course anytime on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast platform, you can listen to Dark Side of the Pooch. So do you know what the most common dog name in Hawaii is?
Maui.
That's close. It's Kona, K-O-N-A, which stands for western or eastern side of an island. And I bring that up because Bark, which is a survey company, just came up with this new study that's been 10 years in the making. 3.2 million dogs have determined that this dog name is the most popular in 35 of the 50 states. You are a veterinarian. You should drill this. What dog comes through the Rossbridge Animal Hospital with the most popular name?
Bella.
Bella is number two. Bella's number two. Max is number three. Cooper, number four. Daisy is number five. But Luna, L-U-N-A, is the most popular dog name in 35 states.
Is it the most popular in Alabama?
In Alabama, it is a Bella, Max, and Cooper.
Okay, see, I got Bella for my state now. You got to give me credit there.
There you go. And there's one other state that does not have any of those five dogs as most popular, and that is Mississippi. Would you like to take a guess at what the most popular dog name in Mississippi is?
Rebel.
It is Sadie.
Okay.
No, you'd think it'd be Rebel, though.
What about Jennifer from Human Resources?
Jennifer from Human Resources. Yes, Linda from Human Resources. That's great. You just heard from James Michael Keats. We're going to have a Cody update. I know that you have a brand new customer with Cody, the Australian Shepherd. It's James Michael Keats, brand new puppy dog. He is loving on that dog, so we'll get into that story. Before we get anywhere, again, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Great email, some killer email specific to Dr. Rab Stewart, too. We got some ladies that want to know some personal stuff about Dr. Rab. We'll get into those coming up. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We'll talk about that. Of course, again, you can hear our show every single Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. I was just telling James Michael Keats, this is probably my funnest show to do because I know we have some good laughs and great emails. It's a great show, so make sure you continue to listen up. And also, of course, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. Last week, you were talking about the influenza situation. How are we looking at influenza right now with kitty cats and doggies in Alabama?
We had a Zoom call last Monday night. So we have not had a show. We have not produced a show since we had the Zoom call. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be good to give just the key points. The Zoom call that we had was with Dr. Sidra Crawford, who is she works at the University of Florida Vet School, and she discovered the influenza virus that's going around now. Uh-huh. So the high points, you know, the symptoms are coughing, sneezing, and runny nose.
Yep.
This might help some of the frustration with owners, because we now know that dogs are carriers and are able to spread this virus for 2 days without symptoms.
Hmm.
So, a lot of the frustration is my dog went to board. It was fine. And now I'm picking it up and it's sick. I understand why, but so everyone wants to point the finger at the facility that it came from. This is the facility's fault. It's really not.
Yeah.
because they don't know if the dog has flu because it has no symptoms. So maybe it comes in for, maybe it boards for a day and then it goes home. Well, it wasn't coughing then, but it was still spreading the virus to all these other dogs that it came in contact with. And they can spread this in a 20-foot radius.
Wow.
So, you know, that's how contagious it is. Dogs do not cover their mouths. You know, they're always barking and drooling. So, you know, they're just fountains of disease in this case. The incubation period is 7 days. So
does this sound like something that humans have just reached, that humans just went
exactly.
through?
Exactly.
I mean, have you ever exactly. had, have you had any other type of infliction on animals from a disease standpoint that there were no symptoms for 2 days?
Well, no, this happens. This happens with respiratory diseases, but especially yeah. with this one, we know for a fact that this is how the disease behaves.
Wow.
And so they're going to get these symptoms, and the symptoms are going to last for 14 days.
Yeah.
And there's really not a whole lot you can do. We do put them on an antibiotic to prevent secondary bacterial infections. But as far as a cough suppressant, the virus doesn't really respond very well to antitussives. So like cough medication, it doesn't respond well to that stuff. We are putting these dogs on an anti-inflammatory, but that's only going to help, you know, marginally. Mm-hmm. The cough's going to last for 14 days. If they make it through the first week without getting really sick, then they're probably going to be fine. But a lot of these unvaccinated dogs and older dogs, there's a decent chance they're going to develop pneumonia within that first week, and they're going to have to be hospitalized. After we can confirm a positive, these dogs need to stay at home away from other dogs for 4 weeks, because even though their symptoms go away, just like they're shedding the virus 2 days before they have symptoms, they are still shedding the virus up to 2 weeks after their symptoms go away. So any positive case we get, we are mandating that they cannot come back into our office for 4 weeks. For, you know, if they have an issue with the disease or they're really sick, we will go out to the parking lot and see them for something. But they cannot be dropped off and left at our facility until they are 4 weeks out from the disease.
Wow.
So I think those are probably the most pertinent medical facts that clients would want to know.
And you're all over it. I mean, you just had a huge meeting, and that's why we love you. Ross Bridge Animal Hospital's Dr. Rab Stewart at Ross Bridge on Twitter, the Ross Bridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. 208-0301 is their phone number, 208-0301. And also, I think some confirmation here from the CDC, just in case you're wondering, over the last couple of days, they still are not sure. They say it's a very low probability, but as an abundance of cautionary measures, we still don't know if humans can pass monkeypox off to our pets, but they're saying if you do have monkeypox, you probably want to stay away from your animals because they just don't know yet. So it's another information you get here on the Dark Side of the Pooch, which you can hear every Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. Let's get into some mutt mail real quick. Lily in Memphis wants to know, what is Dr. Rab's favorite breed?
Well, I mean, I guess if I'm being honest, I would have to say the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel is pretty high in the running. And that is mainly because I've never been bitten by one.
And really? I've never had one. Cocker Spaniels are kind of biters, aren't they?
No, Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, not a Cocker Spaniel. Oh, okay. I have one of the worst bites I've ever received is by a Cocker Spaniel.
Cocker Spaniel,
the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, I have never met a mean one. And that's what it's all about for me. I don't care. I just don't want to get bit. And so most other breeds have at least tried to bite me. A lot of them haven't landed a punch yet, but most of them have tried. That's why they are my favorite.
info@tonycurryradio.net. Send us your emails. Emma from Little Rock wants to know, has Dr. Rab ever had a house moment from the TV show House? In other words, you get an animal in, you just can't figure out what's wrong with it.
I mean, that happens in veterinary medicine. Probably more than we would like for it to happen. And the main reason is because our field is a lot like pediatrics, and we get no information. We get very little information from our patients. So we end up running a lot of tests, a lot of diagnostics, blood work and x-rays and ultrasounds and PCR panels and stuff like that. We rely heavily on diagnostics. I've had human doctors tell me they wish the patients wouldn't talk to them, because a lot of times that leads the doctor astray. So I can see that. But we have really good resources where we have internal medicine consults and dermatologists and oncologists that we can bounce stuff off of. But we have house moments, and that's why we have places like teaching hospitals like Auburn and Tennessee and Mississippi State and Georgia and Florida. Because, I mean, just like any other healthcare provider, sometimes we hit a roadblock.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of good resources that we can call on.
Can you break into a car to free a hot animal? Your answer coming up here in the state of Alabama and all over the country in just a few minutes. Also a Cody update. James Michael Keats will be talking about his brand new pup. Josh in Dallas says he knows humans pass gas 12 to 25 times a day. I didn't realize it was that much. I know that we pass gas in our sleep. Been there and done that. But he wants to know, he knows dogs toot too because he's heard it. But does the smell, why is the smell so bad? And can a stinky dog point to a much bigger problem from a gastronomical problem situation?
No. Yeah. Well, yes and no. So things that go in just like us, mm-hmm. you know, they must come out. And just like us, a lot of times that can be traced back to something that we ate. So if a dog has a problem with really stinky gas, it doesn't mean that you're feeding them bad food or, you know, low quality. It just means that something that they're eating is causing them to have some pretty rough gas. But even normally, I mean, it's going to smell just like people. I mean, most of the time it's going to stink. But if you're seeing that it's just constant, you know, I mean, just many times a day, then you may need to reevaluate what they're eating, and not because it's bad, but just because it doesn't agree with them.
Okay. Well, there you go. Josh in Dallas, there's your answer there. I thought an interesting thing, and this is obviously an issue, and I got the look actually yesterday. I had both my dogs. I was stopping in at a 7-Eleven. I did turn the car off. I had the windows down about 6 inches, and I was walking in for like three minutes, and I came back. We were in the shade, and some woman looked at me, and I was like, whatever. And I got back in my car. My dogs were fine. But the question has come, is it okay to break into someone's car that obviously you don't know if you see an animal in there and the windows are up or even cracked? In most cases, it is legal as long as you don't do any more damage than you have to and you give it ample time. I don't know what that ample time is. The Hot Car Index through the Weather Channel says that after 15 minutes, the temperature goes up 15 degrees inside the car, and after 30 minutes, it goes up 34 degrees. So if it's a 90 degree day, you can do the math. What is the situation when there is an animal in a car and it gets too hot? Can it be saved? What happens for heat stroke? And just kind of expand on that a little bit.
It depends on how long they were in there. Heat stroke will start off usually causing them to vomit will be the first, you know, vomit and be lethargic will be the first signs that people notice, other than panting. But panting doesn't have to be a sign, you know, that they're in heat stroke. Panting just means they're trying to cool themselves off.
Yeah.
So dogs will vomit. They'll become lethargic. They might become ataxic or dizzy. But one of the most fatal things that happens is it can mess with their clotting times. And they can go into disseminated intravascular coagulation or coagulopathy, and that just means that their blood begins to clot in the veins, and it uses up and the vessels, and it uses up the clotting factors. So then they're no longer able to clot their blood, and so then you just kind of get widespread you know, bleeding throughout the body. They'll get little bruises on their skin, and that's called petechia or ecchymosis. Petechia are little small bruises, and ecchymosis are large ones that develop. And, you know, eventually that will lead to multiple organ failure and then death. So if a dog goes into the coagulopathy that I'm talking about, it's not very likely that they're going to be able to be saved. But if you catch them early where they maybe are just, you know, they're not in that stage yet where their temp, you know, maybe anywhere from 105 and a half to 103 and a half or below, you know, depending on how long they were at the upper end of that range, maybe you can save them. But it's all, you know, time is important.
I get so turned on when you use those big words. I mean, I just love that. When we have a doctor on talking about coagulation, what was that? Coagulation.
Coagulopathy or coagulation.
God. Oh my gosh. I may have to put that on a tape and just let me loop it one night. So let me ask you this. So up in the Seattle area, when it got up to 100 degrees, it's obviously 35 degrees warmer than it normally is there, and they're not used to it. They don't have air conditioning or anything else. And then, of course, over the UK, they also had a heat situation. But if you go to some naked pygmy on a Caribbean island where it's 110 degrees every day, they're used to that heat. Are dogs environmentally conditioned to deal with heat differently than other dogs? In other words, if you have an outdoor dog, a dog that's normally outdoors a lot and it's 90 degrees, does he get along with 90 degree heat better than, say, an inside dog that's put outside?
Yes. And if you, as the temperature warms up, if you expose them incrementally to the temperature outside over the course of a couple of weeks, they will be a little more hardy when it comes to, having heat stroke. Okay. Yes.
90 degree day, dogs in the shade, have a big bowl of water. They can stay outside for a couple hours.
They should be able to.
Okay.
They should be able to. I think that's, I mean, there's a lot of dogs out there that do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, let's be honest. There's a lot of dogs that are backyard dogs and they know how to survive, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's why they're better at surviving, but some dogs are way more prone to heat stroke, and dogs that are like bulldog breeds or Shih Tzus with a short nose, pugs, things like that.
Talk about that real quick, because I was not aware of that until we started doing Dark Side of the Pooch. Talk about the short nose dogs and the differences there as far as in heat exhaustion and so forth and so on.
They're called brachycephalic breeds, and it's just any dog that doesn't have a cylindrical nose. You know, they just have that flat face. So obviously bulldogs come to mind, but Shih Tzus are another one. For whatever reason, they don't breathe well, number one. So they don't pant well. So they don't really have that cooling effect that other dogs have. And because of their poor upper respiratory anatomy, meaning they're narrow nostrils, and they have these things around their voice box that can poke out in the wrong direction, and because of those things they have a hard time cooling themselves with panting, and that sets them up to have a heat stroke.
And if you were listening to the show last week, you also heard that just having your dog shaved doesn't necessarily mean it'll be cooler. So that's something that keeps us a little cooler, but not so much animals. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Dark Side of the Pooch airs every Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock right here on the TKR app. Thanks to tens of thousands of folks who've already downloaded that app. And, of course, wherever you get your podcast, you can listen to us on Spotify, Audio Boom, iHeart, iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcast, check out Dark Side of the Pooch. Marsha in Rainbow City wants to know, why does her cat love earwax so much? She said every time she uses a Q-tip and earwax, the cat gets into the trash and pulls them out and starts licking the ends. What's up?
Cats are weird. I don't know. There's some, I mean, maybe a smell or a texture thing. That's the best I can tell her.
Now, I read something, because I was doing a little show prep, that actually animals like, or cats like to use earwax is some type of oil or something inside their ears to bathe themselves or lick themselves. Does that sound like no? They're biologically attracted to the smell and the feel of earwax.
I don't know that that's true. Okay. I'm not saying it's not true, but I'm also saying I'm not sure.
Okay. Bill in Birmingham wants to know, what's the real reason? He heard our dog myths last week and loved it. He wants to know, why do dogs really bury things? And normally they never bury them back up. We always thought that maybe they bury bones to hide them from other dogs and they can eat them later. But why do dogs really bury things? Do you know?
Another one that I don't know. We need to take these questions and send them to Auburn's vet school and say, hey, we need a class on these questions because you did not teach me why dogs and cats do this. Yeah, I don't know. I would think it would be for preservation of some kind. You know, they don't, they don't want to share it. They don't want anything else to get it. But then again, who knows?
Okay. James Michael Keats is here. You have probably seen him on Walking Dead. He's been on a couple episodes. He's got himself a brand new Australian Shepherd named Cody, and he has some questions. Our Cody update. Go ahead, James.
What's up, Dr. Rab? How are you, man?
I'm good. How's that dog?
Oh, man, she's wonderful. She's also about 10 hands full. Handfuls? Hands full.
Anyway. He really believes that a puppy is harder to look after than a child. At this point,
it's all over the internet, Tony. You can look it up. So look, my first question, I've got three. I'm gonna see if I can machine gun these at you really quick here. So, okay. Tony's got these dogs and he's also got these, this really big backyard. And I was thinking, hey, it would be great to bring my puppy over and, you know, he could maybe put the dogs up, and you know, she could run around in the backyard. So we're not going to the dog park before she gets her shots. Right. I was thinking,
yeah.
Do I need to be concerned about, vaccinated dogs carrying parvo, or do I just need to keep her completely away from all dogs, period, until she's fully vaccinated? What do you think?
If the dog has had parvo, then you should keep them away from that dog.
My
if it has not, yeah. If it has not had parvo, then you're good.
Okay, that's but, great.
So that's like a, it's like a almost a chicken pox kind of thing or shingles kind of thing.
Well, the dogs can still shed, just like we talked earlier with this respiratory disease, the dogs can shed that virus for a while.
Huh.
So it's just best. I mean, you know, if a dog has had parvo 5 years ago,
yeah.
You know, then I think the odds are pretty slim that it's still shedding that virus. But because we're just not sure exactly, it's probably best if they've had parvo, just keep them apart.
All right, okay. So we're definitely staying away from the dog park until it's safe. The other question is, we're trying to figure out crate training, okay? And everybody says crate training is good, except for the people who don't. And I'll tell you, it does me probably just as much anxiety, perhaps more than the dog, to listen to her just scream. And I'm talking like she goes insane. She's biting on the on the inside of the crate, she's throwing her body against it, really gnarly stuff. And sometimes she's crying so hard that she's like vibrating when I take her out. And we're talking short stints. So I've heard some people tell me to persevere, some to say to try some alternate methods. But I know, you know, for dogs living amongst humans, it's kind of important. Because I mean, when the bug guy comes over to spray the house or something, you know, like you might have to put her in there for a little while. What are your thoughts on that? Are there alternatives to crate training? We really have tried to warm her up and make it a safe, happy place, but she friggin' hates it when you close the door, man.
Yeah, you really only have two options, and that's just to press on and make her, you know, deal with it as long as she's not inflicting harm on herself. You know, otherwise you're just, you know, you can change the location maybe and use a room, you know, rather than a kennel. But if you've tried to do short periods of time and give her things in there that, occupy her time or make her happy, then really you've kind of done all you can do at this point. And it's just a matter of if you want to make her push through it and maybe she'll be better. But some dogs don't ever really take to it, and it just becomes a matter of, okay, I have to make a decision. Do I want my dog to be anxious and unhappy, or do I want to have all of my furniture and clothing intact?
And talk just a little bit about the human aspect of this as well, because this does go along with having a baby. If you're up every single waking moment of the evening because your baby's cooing or making a sound, you're never going to get any sleep. And then the joy of having that animal is not as fun as it should be. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because sometimes it plays into what you need too, right?
Yeah, the advice that we got from our pediatrician was when you get to a point where it's time for them to cry it out. And that's obviously not the day you bring them home from the hospital,
sure.
You know, and I don't remember the age. My wife would remember, you know, but we'll just forget that part of it. Cause I'm talking people, talking babies here, but there did come a point where the pediatrician said, okay, now it's time for them to learn that you have to sleep, and it's time for them to go to bed. So he said, start out, take your baby, put them in their bed or crib, and let them cry for 5 minutes, and then go get them and do that for a night. And then the next night, let them go for 10 minutes. And then you just incrementally build that up until, you're like at an hour. And then they're not going to last that long. I mean, that baby's going to be asleep.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it perfectly translates to dogs, but I mean, that's something that, could be attempted.
She definitely gets worse as time goes on. And like I said, at that point, like, I don't want to leave her alone because she starts throwing her body around. And I know that the crate, I mean, it's one of those wire crates, and we've got it with the divider, so it's the right size. She can't get a good running start or anything, but it doesn't look healthy. But maybe it's just because I'm not super experienced with it. But I'm telling you, it looks and sounds freakish, and I think she could end up hurting herself. So I get super nervous, man. I was crying and shaking myself once she was in there. And
if you don't want to leave her, if you don't want to leave her in the kennel, then if you're worried that she's tearing stuff up with her mouth, then I mean, get yourself a basket muzzle, make her wear that. And that way she can still drink. She can open her mouth and pant. It's not going to put any pressure on her face. It won't be a problem at all. If you're worried about a bathroom situation and that's why you have her in the kennel, well, then that's something you just got to have to live with, she's going to go to the bathroom in the house most likely, unless she's already trained not to.
Yeah, definitely a struggle, which is why we were very interested in the crate training, because they sort of go hand in hand. Last one is an easy one. How do you feel about cow hooves with dogs and puppies?
If you're there and you can watch them, and as it gets to a size where you worry that they could swallow it, then you just need to take it away.
But it's not going to splinter or do anything like that.
It can hurt their teeth. If it's hard enough, they'll break their teeth on it. And so that's another concern with them. But the two main concerns is they're going to, they are going to cause some trauma in their mouth, because they will. Or they're going to swallow them.
And you want to take the hoof off the horse or the cow first, right?
That's preferred. because the animal,
screw you over there, nod your head.
The animal may not want to be chewed upon.
Yeah.
If the hoof is still connected.
Let me ask you this. Cause you're a veterinarian and you're asked a lot of questions about animals because you have the answers. I have told James, I've had dogs my entire life. I've had puppies. I've had kittens. I've had gooses. I've had ducks. I've had chickens. I've had goats. I've had baby everything. And it's funny because as a parent, I see what he's going through with his first animal, and I just want to keep my mouth shut because I know the first time is always the most difficult. And by the time you have your third dog, you're like, that damn thing is staying in the crate tonight. I'm going to bed. I don't care if it cries all night. So, be careful. We all have different parenting skills, and it's a beautiful dog. Cody's just like the color on that dog is just fantastic. Real final question, and you wanted to mention this too, the zoomies. He said that Cody gets the zoomies around 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. The dog just goes crazy, and they have to stay away from me because it wants to bite and play. What's up with that?
She turns into Satan, Dr. Rab.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And, I mean, your best just to stay out of the way.
Just
because that's something that'll change as they get older. But the other thing is, what's going to happen is you're going to let her stay out of the kennel. That's just what's going to happen. And then she's going to ruin something or break something. And then she's going to do it again. And then she's going to do it again. And then she's going to do it again. And you're going to say exactly what Tony just said. I don't care. You're going in the kennel. You just chewed up my expensive shoes or sunglasses or my PlayStation controller or whatever, and I'm done. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Not the PlayStation controller, no.
And until then, you can let her out. You can let her stay out. But she's either going to cross the line, or maybe she'll figure out how to exist and not mess stuff up.
Or I'll get a bunch of upgrades to my stuff.
Yeah, where you get some upgrades, that's true. All right, we got time for one final question. We're going to go a little long here. Christy in Tuscaloosa, because she said, Blink, sure you get to my question. She's got herself a dog. It's 2 years old, and the thing just keeps running away. She's trained it. They love on it. It's a great indoor dog. They love it. But the dog, as soon as it gets outside the house, it is running down the street. She's starting to get her feelings hurt. She always feels like, you know, if the dog doesn't want it and it never comes back home, they have to go out and look for it. What's up with the dog that keeps doing that? What does that mean?
My dog does it. And my dog came from the streets. So I've just always thought that it's because he, you know, just for the first several months of his life, he just ran around wild.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the same case with this dog or not, but there are some days that I have the same feeling that if the dog doesn't, you know, if you want to run away, you go ahead and you run away and, you know, maybe we'll be here when you come back. Maybe we won't, you know,
that's
because
you do with your kids, right? When they're
right,
13 or 14,
exactly.
Go ahead. Good luck.
You know, we have, we invested in a fence around our yard for this dog, for our dog. And, so, you know, sometimes you just have to come up with physical barriers or underground electric fences.
What's too early for an underground electrical fence for, is it too early for a pup?
Oh, it's no, it's, I mean, 12 weeks of age. I mean, that's,
that may be something,
I mean,
you can do in the back there, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Rab, as always, very entertaining. I love it. It's fantastic. Your show airs every Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. Go to the Rossburg Animal Hospital if you're looking for a fair veterinarian. He's the best. I take all my dogs there. He could move to Arkansas, and I'm probably going to be traveling. He's the best. 208-0301, 205-208-0301, or rossbridgeanimalhospital.com, and, of course, also on Facebook and at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter. Doc, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and we'll catch up next week.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Thank you, bro.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.